The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Well, in honor of it being Wednesday and looking for, you know, the funny to start the show, today, I guess in honor of the big royal visit, the Washington Hillbillies visiting the royal family in London, we give you the UK's wonderful news presenter, Jonathan Pye. Or not. Man, I hate when this happens. You know, I go through the best laid plans and all. I really, really, yeah, there's no rhyme or reason as to when it works and when it doesn't work. I'm going to try it one more time just for the hell of it. But of course, today I didn't pull the audio over. So, there is one way I can play it for you. You won't see Jonathan Pye's beautiful face, but I'm going to try to play it for the benefit of the people on YouTube. Let's try it one more time. Fingers crossed. Now. Nope. Okay. Well, you know, always in the interest of doing good radio, man. All right. We're going to, Jonathan Pye, for those who don't know, who aren't familiar, you need to check him out on YouTube. Jonathan Pye is a newscaster, a presenter, a news presenter over in England. He's always doing these stand-ups in front of Buckingham Palace, and he does the setup, and then they go to the videotape, and Jonathan Pye just sort of, he rants a little bit to whomever might
President
be listening.
Trump has just arrived, but this is Donald Trump we're talking about here, and he flew into controversy even before Air Force One had touched down. I'm here with all the latest. So even before he's even landed, he's called the Duchess of Sussex nasty and the Mayor of London a stone-cold loser. At tonight's state dinner, he's expected to call the Queen a frumpy old bat. The first state dinner in history with McDonald's on the menu. I love it. He's caught on tape calling Meghan Markle nasty, and then he calls it fake news, even though it's on tape. That tells you all you need to know. He's either a liar or doesn't remember what he said from one day to the next, which means he's insane. Either way, he's also the most powerful man on the planet. It's like when he retweeted Britain First. He either did it on purpose, in which case he deliberately promoted fascists, or he did it by accident, which means he's a fucking idiot. And the most powerful man on the planet. All right, he's the only president I can remember that hasn't at least claimed to want to represent his entire country. His presidency only exists through the prism of division. What does Donald Trump have to do before we stop rolling out the red carpet? Take the piss out of the disabled? Brag about sexual assault? Undermine press freedom at every turn? Describe far-right demonstrators as good people? Undermine NATO whilst describing a despotic, murderous dictator like Kim Jong-un as a great leader? Deny women their reproductive rights? Pay off porn actresses for their silence? Deny climate change by giving him the honour of a state visit? We're saying that we're willing to appease all this behaviour and his rhetoric if you give us a trade deal. Please give us a trade deal, because we need that fucking trade deal, don't we? In fact, we're relying on it. Exactly what people voted against in the referendum. Dependency on a government outside the UK. By leaving the EU, we were supposedly taking back control. Well, we're about to hand it straight back over to someone else. A trade deal with this present administration involves giving up a huge amount of soft power, okay? We're giving up EU rules, which are, you know, safety first, and we're taking US rules instead, which is kind of more, screw it, if it costs a few people's lives and a few lawsuits, it's worth the risk. Brexit was sold to us as the only way to save the NHS. As soon as we start getting into bed with Big Pharma, that is the end of the NHS as we know it. If Donald Trump is our only hope post-Brexit, then we're fucked, quite frankly.
You're fucked.
A state visit is ultimately an act of political diplomacy. Donald Trump doesn't do diplomacy. He transcends diplomacy. He doesn't possess a single tactful atom. And diplomacy, it might just seem like politeness, but it matters. On the world stage, it matters. It's actually what stops us from blowing each other up most of the time. Yeah? President Donald Trump, a man who looks like a pickled intestine in a suit with shit hair. His hair, it looks like, you know, one of those eggs that's still got a bit of shit on it, and stuck to the shit is a little bit of feather. Yeah, that's his hair, okay? President Donald Trump, okay? A pickled intestine in a suit with shitty feather egg hair. Okay, yep, okay. Yeah. Well, there's no love lost between President Trump and Sadiq Khan. Apparently, the president fuming as he stepped off Air Force One.
How awesome is he? Our technical problems aside, Jonathan Pye, so funny. Hear it without the audio and the video problems, and you'll even laugh more. All right, well, my name's Nicole Sandler, and I have an admission to make. I blew it yesterday. I completely forgot to acknowledge, sorry, who's ever calling in? You know what? Hold on. All right. Hi, who's this? Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, hi. This is Nicole. Yeah, who's calling?
This is Ryan. Good afternoon.
Hi.
What's Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. What's up?
Well, here's what I'm having my issues with as far as this whole Democratic presidential nomination stuff like this with Joe Biden's record on abortion. It's clear he's pro-choice. He's pro-life, I'm sorry.
Right. He's, in fact, it's one of the topics I was going to get to today, if we ever get to the news today, which is Joe Biden's campaign today confirmed that Joe Biden still backs the Hyde Amendment. Now, you remember the Hyde Amendment. We've had lots of debates over it. That's the measure that prohibits the use of federal funds for abortions, with exceptions for cases involving rape, incest, and the life of the mother. Joe Biden has been in favor of the Hyde Amendment without those exceptions. Joe Biden is not pro-choice.
He's definitely pro-life. Now, my issue with Mr. Biden is Mr. Biden's going to sink the ticket.
Yep.
Even if he gets the nomination, Donald Trump's going in for another reelection because this guy, Donald Trump, will just tear him apart.
I'm going to stop you right here only because I got a bunch of stuff I got to do today. Our job is to make sure we nominate a good candidate, and that does not include Joe Biden.
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, you got it. Thank you for the call. I'm sorry, I wasn't really planning on taking phone calls today, because as I started to tell you, I lost the phone number that I had dialed into the phone here. Hold on while I try to multitask, something that I'm usually good at, but dialing and talking at the same time, I'm not really good at. I usually have her number programmed into my phone. So here's what happened. Yesterday, I had it in my notes. There was a really important anniversary that happened yesterday that I just sort of spaced out on. And it's odd because, you know, Gotta Laugh was here, and it's something that kind of involves her as well. And I don't even know if she was aware of the day. But, you know, I woke up this morning and said, holy shit, how did I forget to do that? So in order to properly introduce my friend Amy Simon, we've got to play the proper intro.
It's time for Amy Simon of She's History, the most dangerous women in America then and now.
Ah, All right. So my friend Amy Simon, you know her, you love her if you've listened to the show for any amount of time. She is the creator of, the writer, the performer behind She's History. It's a show about women. Our founding mothers. And Amy Simon, who used to do a regular weekly slot with us for many years, she reminds me of you know, red letter days, important days in history that deal with American women. And hi, Amy Simon.
Hello.
So yesterday was a fairly big day, and I totally blew it off. So let me have it. Come on.
Oh, my gosh. First of all, I just love you because I was actually kind of sick yesterday and did not remember, although I have a giant paper in my living room outlining all the different steps to winning the vote in 1920. And so when I woke up this morning and saw your text saying, oh, my God, I blew it, I'm like, I can't believe you remember June 4th. So I think I have mentored you a little bit, and you have mentored me, so yay.
Yay.
Okay, so yesterday, June 4th, absolutely. 1919, June 4th.
1919, 100 years ago yesterday. What
yesterday.
Happened?
Yesterday. Yep, 100 years ago yesterday, the 19th Amendment was finally ratified. The Senate, yeah.
It passed.
I sent it to you.
Yes, you did. I have it right here. 66 to 30. It passed the Senate. June 4th, 1919. Yesterday marked 100 years that the Senate passed the 19th Amendment on August 18th, 1919. Now, it didn't officially, the 19th Amendment didn't go into effect yet for another year. But
well, it's really interesting to follow the way the laws are passed. It literally, June 4th was the day that it was passed in the Senate, which made it not quite official, but it was going to be a law. It was signed into law. Actually, it was August 18th, 1920. Took 18 months to officially ratify, you know, the way things move through the Congress.
Yep.
And it was August 18th, 1920. What happened was Tennessee became the 36th state to ratify it.
Right.
And that story is so great. And you had Elaine Weiss on your show.
Yes.
Who wrote the book, The Woman's Hour, because, you know, the battle, as Bella Abzug would say, the battle for equality, it took forever. The first time that the vote was put on the floor of the House was in 1868, actually. That was the first time it was put up for a vote.
Wow.
And it took from 1868 to literally June 4th, 1919, to get enough of the Senate to pass it, to push it through Congress to get it signed into law.
Right. And that,
it was
that book,
Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, that started it.
Right. And that book, The Woman's Hour, which I believe I sent to you, actually really focuses in on the fight getting that 36th state to ratify it. Thank you. Yeah. And so it was the fight in Tennessee to get them to be the 36th state to ratify it so that the women had the right to vote. So apparently that's going to be made into a movie or something.
Right. Okay. So, they were waiting on one state, and the way they organized, and I want everyone to remember what it was like back then. There were no cell phones or social media. I mean, it was door-to-door stuff. It was literally, they did have telephones finally back in the early, 19, but mostly it was door-to-door and just hardcore grassroots petitioning to get people organized. And, you know, back then it was still it's almost like it is again today, with men thinking that women should not, I'll read you something that stopped it from being passed earlier, before 1919. There was one of a senator where they were getting close, and what he said was, his name was Senator McCumber, just some idiot white guy in Congress who did not think women should have the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the two votes that stopped it way, back then. Whether the child's heart pulses beneath his own breast or throbs against her breast, motherhood demands above all tranquility, freedom from contest, from excitement, from the heart's burning of strife. Like, men literally still thought just 100 years ago that women were not, they were too fragile to be able to be in the public sphere. Women's place was in the home. you know, in Bella Abzug, she ran on a Women's Places in the House of Representatives, which is, you know, where she ended up. But even back in Abigail Adams' days, I mean, there were, and I put all this kind of stuff in my show because you got to find the comedy, and it's tragically funny, the kind of stuff that went on. But there were medical journals where women's brains were literally thought to be tiny. I know you show that picture.
In fact, that picture is up on YouTube right now. This is a screen grab from your show, She's History, where you're showing.
I created that picture myself, but literally it's from my research that men and women, some, thought that women's brains were too small to be able to understand anything, you know. I mean, starting back in the 1700s with the Vindication of the Rights of Women, Mary Wollstonecraft, our first feminist writer, women have been fighting tooth and nail, clawing, going to jail, getting beaten. I mean, the stuff women went through to win equality, the right to vote. And, you know, women understood that it was about being able to be part of what was the elective franchise, to be able to vote. And, you know, women organized for the 13th Amendment, which got the black freed slaves, you know, the black men free.
Mm-hmm.
The 13th Amendment
right.
freed the slaves, and it was the women. They got 400,000 signatures to give to Lincoln, to give to the Congress, to get the 13th Amendment passed so that free the slaves. And then when the 14th Amendment came along, the women, well, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, they were like, okay, great, you know, we did that for you, awesome. Now it's our turn to vote. And they said, actually, no, it's not the, it's the Negro's hour. We're just going to get the freed slaves the right to vote. And Elizabeth and Susan went berserk and said, what are you nuts, you know, in today's language.
Yep.
You know, we fought for you. And it split the women's movement because many of the other women that were part of this abolition movement to free the slaves, they were like, you know, we're going to wait. It's really not our turn. Let's just get the men, the freed men. And Elizabeth, you know, was taken to task. She and Susan were ostracized and it split the movement. And she was like, do you think the entire African race is made up entirely of males? You're not even going to let black women? Like, what the hell?
Yep.
And it took until 1920. I mean, it was an unbelievable battle. And the best, well, not the best part, but one of the most wonderful parts, and it's in the book, The Woman's Hour by Elaine Weiss. And yes, Hillary Clinton and Steven Spielberg are teaming up to turn it into some kind of a movie or a docuseries or a web, something wonderful.
Gotcha.
And they're working on that now. Also, as a side note, I did read that Hillary and her daughter Chelsea are forming a production company, much like Barack and Michelle Obama have done, and they're forming one also to tell women's stories, which is
awesome. You know what somebody needs to do, and actually it should be with Steven Spielberg or Rob Reiner or a coalition of the biggest directors out in Hollywood. They all need to take the Mueller report and dramatize it, break it up into 3-minute video clips that demonstrate all the things that Trump was guilty of that are laid out in the Mueller report so people will actually watch it.
Yes, and I'll let you know and the readers know that I read that actors in New York, I don't know if it's still going on, but they started to do a continuous reading of the Mueller report. All the actors, a bunch of actors in New York have gotten together and they're doing a staged reading of the Mueller report. And now they're organizing one here in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And I've signed up for it, but I haven't heard back yet. But
yes, cool.
Of course, we have to get that.
Gotta get it out there.
Yeah, we have. But what I wanted to mention, because I try to find the funny in telling all these
tragic
stories,
is
that The fight in Tennessee, it was the last state, and they knew the women, Carrie Capman Chatt, who was a leader, and Alice Paul, who were, they were on opposite sides, but they all got together to fight for Tennessee, and it was this one 24-year-old guy named Harry Burns, who was the deciding vote, and it was his mother who sent him a telegram. This is like a famous story for us crazy historians.
Yeah.
Sent a telegram saying, don't forget to be a good boy and help Mrs. Catt put rat in ratification. And it was his vote that did it.
That's great.
And
I,
just
I
to
love
remind,
that.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, there were, and I always make a point of this because there were many, many men that fought just as hard for women. Men fought as hard for the women to win the right to vote as men fought against. And there were women that did not want to have equality like that. They thought that they would have to serve in the war or do things that they didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there was lots of, I guess, fake news back then, you know, about what it would mean for women to have, you know, equality, which, of course, we finally still don't completely have.
No, we don't.
And I hate to bring it up because I know what you're going to say. You're going to bring up the Equal Rights Amendment, right?
Yes, of course, which we still don't have, and we need one more state to ratify.
One more state, yeah. And just to remind how just complicated it all is, you know, we had enough votes almost to ratify back in 1972. We were very close. We were three states away. And this was during Bella Abzug and Gloria Steinem and, you know, the whole second wave of feminism. They were, you know, out there fighting for equality, getting want ads in the newspaper to stop being separated by gender. I mean, I could go on and on about what strides we've made just in the past 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a woman named Phyllis Schlafly,
yeah, yeah.
who was a brilliant strategist, brilliant organizer, and a brilliant anti-ERA person.
Mm-hmm.
And she went around the country and, you know, she stopped it. She really did. She was just like today's Tea Party or,
yeah.
you know, the anti-abortion people. She was like one of those. And she was really smart and good. And unfortunately, it worked.
Yeah.
And we were three states away back in the 1970s.
Yep. And now it's one more. And I'm even though I talk to people all the time about it and I'm told, oh, we're still working on it, it's been sort of on the back burner. Now, look, we need to replace this president. The Democrats need to take back the Senate. When those things are done,
yeah.
this needs to happen like that. And, you know, it kind of sucks that I'm not seeing anybody even mentioning the ERA. But then again, there's a lot of issues that they're talking about.
No. There's really a lot of work being done that you're not hearing about. And actually, the Me Too movement was very inspiring and moved the needle a lot. So, you know, don't give up. We can't give up ever, never give up. As Susan B. Anthony said, failure is impossible. We can't give up. We'll get there. But it's unbelievable what the stuff we're still fighting for. I mean, you know, if we start talking about the abortion fight.
Okay, we'll get there.
Yeah,
Amy Simon, thank you for jumping on. Thank you for reminding us of the great strides that women fought for, because the women didn't get, they weren't given the right to vote.
No.
They fought for
and won the
right to vote 100 years ago.
And I just
want
to say one more thing, that the next year, starting now, and I'm planning on doing some sort of a weekly blog, if I can ever figure out Instagram, on the whole journey to get to August 20th, 1920.
Oh, cool.
Because there's a lot of action, a lot of energy now around the passage of the 19th Amendment. We're in the year coming up to it. So you're going to be hearing more about it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And good. We have that to look out for. Amy Simon, find her at sheshistory.com. You find learn all about her show and everything else she's doing and some great, fabulous female facts. Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you, Nicole.
Happy 100th anniversary to you.
You too.
Thank you, babe. Bye.
Okay, bye.
All right. Today is Wednesday. We do have a guest coming up, another guest later in the hour, is somebody who was also for a long time a weekly regular on the program. And this is before I went off on hiatus, dealt with lung cancer, and came back with a shorter version of the show. But the one and only Drift Glass. Yes, Drift Glass, who is part of the Pro-Left podcast, along with his lovely wife, Blue Gal Fran. They are two of like the original progressive bloggers who've been doing this since the blogosphere was born. And they've seen a lot of changes, and Drift Glass still plugging away over at the Drift Glass blog. So we will we'll check in with him in a little bit. But first, I wanted to bring you a little bit of the news. You know what I'll probably do is save the recorded version of What's News and run it at the end of the show and share with you now the news that has broken or that I've come across since I recorded What's News early this morning. And we'll start, and this part we'll do live. Yes, we will do it live. And we'll start with this. It comes from a new article in Vanity Fair magazine. You know how Donald Trump always claims to support the troops? Well, this new story in Vanity Fair contains revelations both about his finances and his values. Gabriel Sherman wrote, quote, "More than anything, it's talking about Donald Trump's prenup with Marla Maples, okay, which has, I guess, been made public. So Gabriel Sherman writes, "More than anything, the prenup shows how fiercely Trump wanted to protect the money he did have. Maples reportedly wanted $25 million, but Trump agreed to pay her only $1 million if they separated within 5 years, plus another $1 million to buy a house." It continues, "Trump would also stop making $100,000 child support payments for Tiffany when she turned 21. The agreement also states that Trump's payments would cease earlier if Tiffany got a full-time job, enlisted in the military, or join the Peace Corps. So legendary divorce lawyer Raoul Felder weighed in on the article and said the way it was drawn up is ironclad and shows how wary he was. He was leaving nothing to chance. But if she joined the military or the Peace Corps, she'd be cut off from child support funds. Wow. Unbelievable. Totally believable, but you know what I'm saying. All right, YouTube announced today that they will remove false videos alleging that major events like the Holocaust didn't happen, as well as a broad array of content by white supremacists and others in a move to more aggressively crack down on hate speech. All right, well, that's a good announcement. I'm glad to hear they say they're going to do it. The Google-owned video site, along with its Silicon Valley peers, is starting to take a broader view of hate speech in the face of criticism that it has failed to prevent the spread of harmful videos that distort world events, hurt children, or promote discriminatory ideologies. You think? Now, it would be nice if Facebook would follow suit, but doesn't seem that they will. Let's see, the new hate speech policy will go further than what they've done in the past. The policies will specifically ban videos, quote, alleging that a group is superior in order to justify discrimination, segregation, or exclusion. Based on those categories, that would include groups that glorify Nazi ideology. The company specified that in its announcement because such beliefs were, quote, inherently discriminatory. It's kind of mind-boggling that they have to state that in writing, but I'm glad that they did. Yep. Now, here's another. This administration is just doing everything in its power to take us back a century or two. Along those lines, Trump's Department of Health and Human Services today said it would immediately end a $2 million a year contract with the University of California, San Francisco, for research involving fetal tissue from elective abortions. The contract on this research was signed in 2013. The department also said that based on a review it began last fall, it would discontinue all research within the National Institutes of Health involving fetal tissue from elective abortions. Unbelievable. And as I was mentioning to our caller earlier, on a somewhat related note, the Biden campaign today confirmed that Joe Biden still backs the Hyde Amendment, a measure that prohibits the use of federal funds for abortion, with exceptions for cases involving rape, incest, and when the life of the mother is in danger. Biden is the only one of the two dozen or so people vying for the Democratic nomination for president to hold this position. Now, Biden has also been consistent in his support for measures regulating a woman's body. As a U.S. senator from Delaware, Biden voted against a 1977 compromise that allowed Medicaid to fund abortions that included exceptions for victims of rape and incest, in addition to concerns for the life of the mother. Now, while the rape and incest exceptions passed in that case, Biden voted in 1981 to again remove them. Yes, he was trying to remove the protections for victims of rape and incest. I posted this on social media a little while ago. If you are supporting Joe Biden, then I believe you don't know where he stands on the issues and you need to do some homework. So keep listening to the show. I'll keep telling you. Watch the debates at the end of the month. Hopefully the NBC channels that are, you know, putting on the first debate won't, you know, run cover for him. And I have no doubt that they wouldn't. Unbelievable. One last thing. You heard about Trump's plans to sort of hijack the 4th of July festivities. You know, how he went to France for Bastille Day and wanted some kind of military parade to fete him, to honor him, the great leader. Ugh. Since he couldn't get that done for, I think first he wanted to do it for Veterans Day and you know, not only the city of D.C., but the armed forces balked at the idea. Well, then he decided he was going to just take over the Capitol's 4th of July festivities, an event that has always been nonpartisan. Patriotic, yes. Partisan, hell no. But today, a spokesman for the U.S. Park Police confirmed that the agency has been notified that Donald Trump plans to speak at the Lincoln Memorial on the 4th of July during the celebration. It's an unprecedented event that seems likely to reshape a decades-old celebration that annually draws hundreds of thousands of people to the mall. The spokesman, Sergeant Eduardo Delgado, said that the agency was still working with the White House to determine how the president's movements would affect security surrounding the event. In every way, shape, or form, the 4th of July is not about him. It's not about the office of the presidency. It's about the United States of America. He is not the symbol of the United States. I would like to say the Statue of Liberty used to be, but because of his policies, it is no longer. He should not be speaking on the 4th of July. He should be hiding out like a scared dog when the fireworks go off. He should be afraid to show his face because he should be ashamed of what a piece of shit he is. Am I clear enough there? All right. All right. That's my rant. I haven't even gotten into the shit that he said in this interview with Piers Morgan. Oh, God. You know what? I'd rather talk to Driftglass. So I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Actually, I have an intro for Driftglass. I've got to find him on my phone thing. Oh, there he is. All right. So let's play this. Here we go.
Scanning the mad bladders here on RadioNot.com as we take a walk through the Golden Grooveyard, kicking off a silver dollar twin spin with the Drift Glass.
When this old world starts getting
me that's the Drifters. This is Drift Glass.
Oh, sorry. Here's Drift Glass with Nicole Sandler.
All right, I cut it to the wire, but I could, you know, I could have left the smoke and mirrors up and not let you know that as the announcer there said, here's Drift Glass, is exactly when Drift Glass picked up the phone. Hey,
boom.
There. You know, it's just timing down to the second. That, it's just, yeah.
Well-oiled machine here.
Right. So what was, I was just going off on the feckless piece of shit, you know, the orange resident of the White House who has decided that, you know, he's taking over the 4th of July festivities as his own personal parade that he's been wanting since he got into office. And
sure.
Now it's just been confirmed by the Park Service that the White House has alerted them to the fact that the president will be speaking during this 4th of July event, that they've moved to the Lincoln Memorial so he can speak on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
Well, it's only fair because that black lady got to sing God Bless America there. So it's only fair that an oppressed minority like rich, loudish, white racist should be able to get up there and say his piece, don't you think?
Oh,
that's only fair. I mean,
you know,
she had all the power. And Marian Anderson had all the power in that relationship. I mean, she could. And poor Donald Trump, he can't get in anywhere. Nobody will. They won't even let him stay overnight at Buckingham Palace for
Isn't
fear
that
of
horrible?
The
well,
place.
They
yeah.
saw what happened when they allowed Jared and Ivanka into one of the rooms. They like a ghostly you know, my words are not coming to me today.
Apparition.
Thank you. There they are staring out of the windows. And, you know, at the creepiest times of the year, those faces are going to be staring out at the people of London.
Yeah, they turned it. They made it into the Overlook Hotel for like
yes,
2 days. And
really
that's
did.
Just that the British royals don't need that. They really, really don't. They have enough problems of their own. They don't need these creeps showing
oh
up, ripping off all the
now, furniture. Now, Driftglass, can we be really tacky for a moment and talk about their dress, their
oh, yeah. well,
fashion
yeah.
sense? Oh,
Colby
my
Jack, you mean
oh, my God. First of all, Donald Trump, your mama dresses you funny.
Yeah.
Who told him that looked good? Does he not have eyes? Does he not see that the vest is not supposed to come below the jacket? And does he not realize what a buffoon he looks like?
The emperor's new clothes always look great. They always fit perfectly. They're always wonderful. Everyone else is just jealous of the way you look. You know, and you have a pleasant musk, and your dick is 5 feet long, and your hands are the size of, you know, oars. No, you surround yourself with yes men and stooges who will tell you whatever the hell you want to hear. That's how you end up going out dressed in public.
Oh my God! And then Ivanka looked like she got the people were telling me what it was called. And I'm drawing a blank on it again. The bling-a-later,
bedazzler.
The bedazzler. God, why do I have a blank? I've got a block for the bedazzler. Like she had a denim dress that they had a bedazzling party on. That was the ugliest, most hideous dress I think I've ever seen in that vein. That's like a
Bronco used to sell a fine product that would attach rhinestones and whatnots, cubit zirconia to your clothes.
Yeah.
I think someone just went nuts with her outfit with that.
That's what it
was. Because again, when you're surrounded by people who will tell you that no matter what you do or say or no matter what you wear, you look great and everything is brilliant coming out of your mouth, this is how you go out in public.
Yep. And Tiffany was there, not looking great, I got to say. She looked like her dress was made out of the drapes they pulled down out of the Oval Office to put Donald's, gold ones up. But we just learned today about the prenup that Donald had with Marla Maples that said if Tiffany were to get a full-time job or join the military or the Peace Corps, that her $100,000 a year child support stipend would be cut off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well that's pardon my language.
Yeah, right?
But, you know, I just picture Tiffany like leaving a little note on her plate after the state dinner saying, please let me stay here. please don't make me go home with those people.
But she doesn't go home with them. She travels around the world with Secret Service protection at taxpayer expense. She's got the best deal of all of them because she doesn't have to live with dump and melanoma. She just gets to travel with Secret Service protection everywhere she goes.
Yeah, how'd you like to have that detail? The Tiffany detail.
Oh, God.
That's got to be the trainee section of our, they have to wear a red vest and a lanyard and, you know, they report in every couple of hours on how's it going? How you doing? Uh-huh. Did you discharge your weapon? Is everything okay?
Uh-huh.
But that's, you know, we're 2 years plus into this madness and everything is moving at, you know, lightning speed. There's so much bullshit flying so fast, it's hard to keep track. But on the other hand, there's nothing new about this and nothing has changed. This is pretty much what I think we expected when we elected this lunatic. Not we, but when the country decided to hand the reins over to this madman, or at least with a lot of help from his good friends in Russia. Yep. What else did we expect? This is what disruption looks like.
Exactly. This is what these people voted for. And we have to, you know, stress, this is not half of America. It was maybe a quarter. Most people didn't vote. And again, one of the things I love about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, to totally go off in left field, is that she says we shouldn't be looking to win over Republican voters. What we need to be winning over are non-voters to get them to the polls. If the people who didn't vote would just show up, we'd be in good shape.
Just a fraction of them, a fraction of a fraction of them. And what's keeping them at home is a whole bunch of issues. But I swear to you, primarily, it's because they've been told 1 bajillion times by their local newspaper, by the local news, by the national news, by, you know, columns in the New York Times and Washington Post, both parties are corrupt, both parties are bad, both parties are awful, there's no difference between them, everything is awful, the whole system's corrupt. And if you've been told that literally millions of times over the last 20 years from every source you can think of, and that's how you mark yourself as a smart person in your whatever tribe you travel with.
Yeah,
you look disdainfully at politics and go, they're all fucking crooks. They're all a bunch of crooks. Then, you know, why would you go to the polls at all?
Yeah,
why
good
bother?
Question.
And so we have created a majority in this country who believe there is no difference at all between Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump.
Oy.
There's no difference at all. There's no difference at all. And the great vexing question that I have never gotten a good answer to from any Democratic candidate is how the hell do you get into that? Because unless we on the left have our own TV network and our own publishing houses and our own newspapers and our own churches and match the Republicans point for point,
mm-hmm.
never going to outshout them. We're never going to out-propagandize them, and we're stuck fighting a war on two fronts where we have to fight with Republicans for being evil, and we have to fight with the mainstream media for saying, but you're both evil, so yeah. Why bother?
Yeah. It's kind of stunning. The amount of bullshit we're seeing from the cable channels doing the same stuff they did in 2016 where they didn't learn a goddamn thing is fucked up. Someone in the chat room just said, oh, here, Brian Williams, Ari and Rachel are holding left so far. No, somebody else was talking about Brian Williams, I guess, last night was all about, you know, Biden this and Biden that, and talking about the far left and the far left this and the far left that and the socialists. And it's, oh, my God, shut the fuck up already.
Uh-huh. This is what none of this touches them.
No,
it doesn't matter how big a meteor hits this country. Brian Williams will still make what he makes, go home to his home, and nothing will affect him. So it doesn't really matter. Right. What matters to him is money and ratings and keeping his job, you know, keeping sort of his hanging on to the job of an anchor somewhere by his fingernails. And you do that by playing this game.
Mm-hmm.
And until the people who rig this game so that Brian Williams can get away with saying shit like this.
Yep.
Start feeling some genuine financial and personal pain for doing so, this is the way it's going to be. Nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to change in the media. It doesn't matter how rotting and broken it is. They will always roll out the both sides do it, guys. They will always roll out George Will, for God's sakes.
Oh, my God. George Will and your favorite, Drift Glass, David Brooks, has another book out, and he's making the rounds. And can I tell you the most disconcerting thing that I read today is – David Brooks is younger than me. See, this is where chronological age doesn't work. It just doesn't work because David Brooks is an old man, and I'm what I've always been. So
David Brooks was an old man when he was 20.
I know.
And he's
that's
been old
the
man
thing.
Ever since. And
absolutely.
He's been striving to be an old man ever since.
Yeah, absolutely. I just it's the mentality. It's all in your it's all in the attitude, baby. So he's doing the same shit. And you know, you mentioned who did you just mention?
George Will.
And then there's, you know, Bill Kristol and all of these former crazy right wingers who have one thing in common with the people at MSNBC. They don't like Donald Trump.
Right.
But so they're trying to say, hey, we're all one big happy family. And one thing that you point out a lot at driftglass.blogspot.com and on the Professional Left podcast is that that's bullshit.
Yes. Yes. And it there are people who desperately, desperately want to believe that the Republican Party isn't as psychotic as it appears to be. Or if it is, then somehow it is the fault of everybody equally. Whatever's going wrong in this country, you can dole out the blame for it across so many domains that nobody really specifically individually is to blame for anything. That's the final defense of every coward and every weakling and every fucking George Will in America. So yesterday, George Will, it was a day before yesterday, was on Morning Joe explaining that what happened to the Republican Party? Well, the Republican Party has – because he has a new book too.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Everybody's got a new book.
Of course they do.
I don't have one.
I don't have one. No.
But I know that David Brooks is enjoying the most lavishly underwritten book tour I have ever seen. His publishing house or whoever's backing him is backing him to go all over the planet. He's getting him TED Talks where he's basically monetizing his midlife crisis.
Oh, my God.
You know? I dumped my wife. I took up with a younger woman, and now everything seems wonderful.
Will you read it just for the hell of it? So you just to have read it? No.
Can't.
See, I'm with you. I had an opportunity a little over a year ago, I think, to interview Roger Stone. Believe it or not, and it's like it's like the train wreck that you can't look away from. I'm like, okay, I'll interview him, but I'll be damned if I'm going to read that fucking book. And so I gave it to a listener. And she read it for me. She sort of did a book report for me. And so that way I didn't have to do it. And I was proud to be able to tell Roger Stone I didn't read his book.
Yeah. Well, and these guys are all now in the business. And I do mean business. Mm-hmm. I have no belief at all. I have no way to x-ray their souls. But there's no reason for me to believe that this is just not one more scam in a long history of scams that all of these guys have been pulling off to stay one step ahead of being held accountable for their actions. And the last place you go to stop being held accountable for your actions is you go to church and you say, oh, I've been saved. Look, it's not that I've been bullshitting you and taking your money and lying to you and propping up the Republican Party and trashing liberals and just generally getting everything fucking wrong for the last 25 years. I've been on a spiritual journey. And now I'd like you to buy my book about my spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about you take your spiritual journey and go away.
Right.
Go work in the mountains with people in Appalachia who need your help. But no, George Will shows up on Morning Joe to explain that he thinks that there's a lot of people in this country who'd be receptive to the argument that the reason the right went nuts is because they bought into the progressive vision of government. The progressives are the reason the right went nuts. It's all the liberals' fault why the right went nuts.
Yes.
And who's interviewing, who's cross-examining? Rick Tyler. You know, and that's it. And you know, this is a puppet.
You know, he made the right choice. He backed Ted Cruz.
Yeah. Yes. Because Ted Cruz is so much better for the soul of the country.
Oh, yeah.
Donald Trump. But it's this Muppet who worked for, you know, who worked for Ted Cruz, quote unquote, interviewing George Will with these obvious set up pre-programmed softball questions. So, George, how did progressivism destroy the righteousness of conservatism? Uh-huh. Well, you know, Donald Trump has nothing to do with conservatives. Nothing to do with conservatism. No. What's going on inside the Republican Party is
that,
not...
You know, that's true. And that's one thing that these guys all say. I did hear a little bit of Bill Kristol talking about that Republicans for the Rule of Law video they put out. That was very good. You know, he's involved with them. That was good. And that needs to play on a loop all the time. But when he says Donald Trump is not conservative, he's right. Donald Trump is not conservative. I don't know what he is. He's a creature of his own making. Listen to this, what he tweeted out just a little while ago. You know, he tweeted this out last night. He's threatening to enact these tariffs on Mexico, which, again, you and I know, they're taxes on us. It's going to make the price of everything we get go up. It's not going to cost Mexico more. It's going to cost us more. And so somebody, I guess Chuck Schumer, floated the idea that Trump is bluffing. So Donald Trump tweets, "Can you imagine crying Chuck Schumer saying out loud for all to hear that I am bluffing with respect to putting tariffs on Mexico? What a creep. He would rather have our country fail with drugs and immigration than give Republicans the win. But he gave Mexico bad advice. No bluff." So this after, of course, or maybe it was before. It was before he picked a Twitter fight with Bette Midler and all that. So, you know, my release these days is because I don't have the opportunity to say something to Donald Trump's face because I can't get into one of those press gaggles. You know, no. I'd never be allowed anyway. So occasionally I'll take a tweet like that and I will answer him, like I did a few minutes ago. And I just wrote, "What is wrong with you? Have you no class, no shame, no discernible hint of decency? Of course not. And you dare call others names? There are no words to describe your repugnant, vile, narcissistic, ignorant, hateful, spiteful, bigoted qualities all in one." You know, I could go on. There aren't enough words to convey the disgust and the utter contempt and just icky feeling I get anytime this man shows up on my screen, or his voice flashes in the air, or I get any you know, thought of him being out there and standing up to representing this country. It's vomitatious. I don't think the words exist.
That's why he is in fact the perfect conservative. Because the conservative movement is about nothing more at this point. I mean, at some point in somebody's dorm room in 1944, it might have been different. But modern conservatism, as it existed my entire adult life, has been about making people like you so angry and so pissed and so sad that you curl up and cry. Yeah. And Donald Trump is the perfect vehicle for that. You can yell at him all you want. You can swear at him all you want. It doesn't affect him at all.
Right. But I don't think that's conservatism. I think that's just right-wing assholery.
Yes. Well, yeah. That's the thing.
Right.
Because and this is there's a trick at the end of this little thing I'm going to read to you. Because a blogger of yours who's on your show right now.
Okay.
Wrote, in other words, in order to win elections and rake in vast fortunes, the conservative brain cast has painstakingly created the perfect feeding ground for con men and demagogues like Trump. The louder and more bombastic, the better. And from David Brooks and the Wall Street Journal and Meet the Press to Ann Coulter and the Washington Free Beacon and the Breitbart Collective, in one way or another, virtually everyone in the media makes bank by flattering conservative meatheads and pandering to their delusions. I wrote that 24 hours after Donald Trump declared himself a candidate.
Wow.
Because I knew for a fact, I didn't know he was going to win the nomination, but I knew that the right, the conservative movement has been spent the last 40 years building the perfect party of chumps and suckers and bigots and morons to win elections. So all you need to do to win is learn the vocabulary and shout it louder than everyone else.
Right.
So you're right. Donald Trump's not a conservative. He's a con man.
Yes.
And he knows he's good at two things. He's good at cheating and lying and ripping people off, and he's getting dumb people to give him money and votes.
Yep.
And that's basically the conservative movement right there. That's all they are.
And so, and being against abortion. Now, Donald Trump has been out in public talking about how pro-choice he is. He was that way for most of his life. But now his con is to, you know, win over the right wing. And I believe the quote was, "I'm not a Republican, but they're easier because they're so stupid." He said something like that.
I believe, a bogus quote. But
really?
The spirit is true. Yeah.
The spirit is definitely true.
And
so, I mean, the whole thing about him going to that church on Sunday after his golf game, ostensibly to, you know, he was in Virginia, so to pray for the victims of the Virginia Beach massacre, regardless of the fact that this church was 3 hours away from Virginia Beach, he didn't mention a word about Virginia Beach. He went in his golf clothes right after leaving the golf course. And what, you know, most who watch him carefully believe is because Franklin Graham called for Sunday to be a day of prayer for Donald Trump. So Donald Trump thought he should show up at an evangelical church to let these poor idiot souls pray for him.
Well, they did the same with Bush, right? I mean, they worshiped George Bush. They held vigils for George Bush, who was a dry drunk, half wit, lying son of a.
He was
bitch.
All those things, but I believe that George Bush, whatever it means, was actually a Christian. I believe Donald Trump is as much a Christian as I am.
Well, but that's not the issue. I mean, it is for you, it is for me, but the issue is not for them. That ever since Reagan invited Jerry Falwell to the table to become part of the movement.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, the word I coined in 2005 for these people was Christopaths. They're not Christians. They're sociopaths who pretend to be Christian.
Right.
And there's millions of them. And what they all have in common is the same thing they have in common with every other Republican constituency. They're stupid. They have no memory at all. They're completely brainwashed. They hate the government. And whatever they said yesterday doesn't count.
Yeah.
And so, if it wouldn't have mattered if Donald Trump were performing abortions in 2007.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
He got rich. It doesn't matter. All he has to do is say, "I'm against abortion. All life is sacred. Whatever the hell this guy's telling me to say, I believe. Blah blah blah. Praise God. 2 Corinthians. Boom. We're on your side, because that's how deeply, deeply warped and mentally underclocking these morons are. Go in it. Now, here's the thing. Bill Clinton could quote scripture chapter and verse.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did. And he was well versed in his scripture. He knew the stories to pull out. He was a skilled and gifted politician. And
well,
the same
he was right.
Hated him. They hated him because he had a D after his name.
Yeah. Okay.
Just for no other reason other than the fact that he had a D after his name.
But they liked Hillary. Hillary is one of them. You know, a lot of people don't realize Jeff Charlotte wrote the perfect book. He's a great author. He teaches up at Dartmouth. But he wrote the book The Family about that the C Street house, and when that all broke apart a few years, it's got to be 10 years ago now. But Hillary Clinton was part of the family. She's one of them. She goes to those weird religious gatherings. She's a believer.
Well, she's a Methodist. I mean, I'm a Methodist too.
Are
you don't
you?
Hear me evangelize, it doesn't matter what you say you believe, what you actually believe. What matters is you go up to Franklin Graham, kiss his ass, he kisses your ass, you're in the club. That's all. Literally, that's all there is to it. These people don't believe a goddamn thing they preach. They They have no there's no point in arguing with them because there's no way you can do, you know, the whole shaming the hypocrites and Pharisees from the Bible thing that Jesus did. You can't hold them account to anything. You'll never get within a million miles of them to say, but the Bible says X and you're doing Y and how do you reconcile the two? They don't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't bother. It's irrelevant to them. All the arguments you and I make based on reason and fact that here's your own words. How can you deny that you just said this? They just stare at you like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
It doesn't matter. Look,
I never did that. It doesn't matter.
Just 2 days ago, he said, I never called Meghan Markle nasty.
Right. Doesn't matter. And 60 million Americans believe it.
Yes. It's the sky is green. It's the Mueller report.
Yep.
No obstruction, no collusion. That's all you need to know, and the American public buys it. And that's a complete fabrication of what's in the Mueller report because it does outline, yes, collusion, but that's not the term they use. And, yes, lots of obstruction of justice. That's why they need to impeach his ass.
Doesn't matter. Might as well be in Mandarin. Might as well be in Sanskrit. Ugh. They're never going to read it. If they read it, they wouldn't believe it. If tomorrow Donald Trump got up and said that Bob Mueller – worships Satan and eats babies, they'd believe it.
Oh, of course
there's
they would.
No right. point trying to fucking reason with these people. They cannot be reasoned with.
Right.
And my dear liberal friends make themselves sick going, but here's another piece of evidence and here's another piece of evidence. I'm like,
right.
it doesn't matter.
Nothing We're matters.
Trying to reason with them. There's no way to reach them. They are as far away from you and me as hamsters, as flatworms. There's no point in trying to pretend that they're anything and they're never going to change. That's the thing. They're never ever going to change.
Right.
And that's just – and so now where are we?
My
thinking always begins at the point, well, those people are lost to reason. So now what do we do?
What do we do? Do you have an answer? I don't know.
I think we have a whole bunch of really interesting candidates,
mm-hmm.
some of whom I have a real problem with. But there's – I think we have a – we stop any candidate who says my plan is to reach out to the guys on the right.
Right.
Gonna have this moment where we all ache and the fever breaks. Nope.
Can we stop the guy who says, "Well, yeah, I support the Hyde Amendment. I don't think federal funds should be used for abortion."
Well, I listened to Michael Bennett the other day.
Yeah,
being interviewed by Ezra Klein, and it's like this is just he talks in self-negating sentences.
Yeah.
His climate, he wants radical change on climate. He wants radical this and radical that and money and politics, all stuff I agree with, but he doesn't want to get rid of the filibuster, and it's the system, and it's Washington, and it's politics. And Ezra Klein, you could just hear him going nuts, going, but how the hell do you fix anything you want to fix without acknowledging that one party is out of its freaking mind?
Right.
Well, they are out of their mind. Well, what are you going to do? Well, we're going to educate the American people.
Oy.
And we're going to – no. If your business plan involves changing human nature and educating a bunch of people who've spent their entire life staying stupid, you're going to fail. The answer is you do it. We just talked about the beginning of this. Dig deeper into the non-voting population. Get people out who sat on their hands in 2016. Get people out into the field. We had a congressional election right here where I would knock doors for Betsy Dirksen Lonergan, who is further to the right than I would like, but she's further to the left than any other candidate running.
Okay.
So she's my candidate, right?
Gotcha.
And she lost because I believe she didn't go door knocking in rural districts.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. She didn't go out and talk to farmers. Not all farmers are crazy. She lost by a few thousand votes. But next time, she has to go talk to farmers about tariffs.
Right.
About soybeans.
Yes.
And about wheat.
Absolutely.
And about wages. And about unions. And don't you want your kids to go to a decent school? Don't you give a damn about your kids' water? Don't you? You farmed this land for three generations. Don't you want to make it four?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing that I'm personally vexed by this. There's nothing I can do about it. The major liberal podcasting networks
that are
entirely on the coasts.
Yeah.
They exist in New York,
yes.
D.C.,
well,
New
as
York,
are the
LA,
cable
LA,
channels.
D.C.
So a good independent voice like Drift Glass or Blue Gal will not, or Nicole Sandler, will not be invited on these programs or to talk or to have their podcasts as part of their network or anything like that.
It's maddening because they will say, you know, we got the Midwest, got to get out there in the heartland,
yeah, uh-huh.
talk to these people.
The South,
I don't mean talking to lunatics who will never vote for you.
Of course.
I mean talking to people who are starving mm-hmm. for someone to come talk to
mm-hmm.
them. And all I see are the planes flying overhead.
Yep.
Oh, we're going to D.C. Oh, L.A. to D.C. Oh, okay, we're going back to D.C. Okay, I guess that's how we do things now.
Yeah.
And it is a disaster in the making, because if we don't talk to the people who are actually going to go out and vote, who we can actually get, who didn't go out last time, then we're in real trouble.
I hear you. And some of them will, and some of them won't. And we'll see how the field narrows down. And I guarantee it's going to be the ones who are going around actually talking to the people, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, hello, that are going to continue to rise in popularity, I hope, and win the presidency ultimately. Drift Glass, the time went all too quickly. I want to make sure people know they can find you, your blog that perseveres to this day, at driftglass.blogspot.com. And of course, they can hear you and the lovely Fran on the Professional Left podcast at proleftpod.com. What?
Approaching our 500th episode.
Wow. Congratulations and happy anniversary. I don't know how many I've done. I just keep churning them out.
You just keep going. You're just the little engine that can.
Don't know what else to do. I'll talk. Okay. Drift Glass, thank you so much. Say hi to Fran for me, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks. Bye. Tomorrow is Thursday. Howie Klein will be here, and we'll also get an update on the new NAFTA from Lori Wallach of Public Citizen. Oh, boy. See you then. Keep the faith, baby.